Hey everyone, welcome to Buzzing About Romance. I am Becky, and joining me for this episode is Jenny. Hi, Jenny.
Hi, Becky.
And then we have two special guests with us. We have author Allie Styles, and we said, hey, bring a friend and come hang out with us. And Allie brought her friend, author Ginger Scott. Welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having us. Thanks for inviting me.
We're excited. I sent her email. I'm like, hey, who do you want to have? And she's like, oh, I have to bring someone. Sometimes my communication skills need work. But Allie, welcome. We are happy to have you. I think we did a happy hour with you with your last Smarty Pants release, or two Smarty Pants
releases. Yeah, one of them. Maybe it have been last year. I think I was at the beach when we did that one.
Yeah, I think you were on vacation or something.
Oh, that's exciting.
You know. We don't mind to travel. We don't get to travel very often, but we don't mind to travel. So did everybody have a great Mother's Day? Good Sunday? Jenny, did you do anything exciting?
No, I just helped my oldest pack for camp, but that was a limit on my excitement.
Yeah. And Allie, you said you wrote all day, which yay.
I got a book off to the editor. So I'm pretty excited about that one.
Exciting. And Ginger, you napped, which I think we're all a little jealous of.
Yeah. I napped. Yeah. That's the joy of when your kid is 20 and he's home for summer from college. So he napped too. And I was like, well, if we're all napping.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Minor.
That counts as family time, right?
Yeah, exactly. Quality dream time.
Mine are almost 21 and almost 19, and they did their own thing. And I was like, awesome. I've been rewatching Chicago PD.
Oh, okay. I like that show.
Some of those actors on that show are pretty hot. Like from from Voight down. Like they all, although I will say Chicago PD or Chicago Fire. Kelly Severide, that actor. Is it Tyler Kenny?
That's so crazy though.
What?
It's so crazy. Like,
none of it is real. Like,
it's so not real. Yeah. It's so, my husband's from Chicago. So being married to Chicago, I'm like looking around. I'm like, oh, they're nothing. They don't look like the show.
No. My husband's a paramedic and now he works as a ER nurse. So, yeah. Like, realistic part of any of those situations.
In their break time, they're like, you know, having contests for who can make the biggest tape ball. Like, that's
right.
I'd watch that show. I don't know.
Right?
I mean, I feel like I am kind of watching it right now. Just for some eye candy on the TV. I don't know. So I can binge watch a show, but I can't binge watch or I can't binge read books. Does anyone else have that problem?
Kind of. Yeah. I can kind of relate to that. Like if I'm reading someone's series, sometimes I can go about two books and then I want to build in like my own like season break.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sometimes it can get like binge reading. I struggle with sometimes because then things start to blur together and I'm already terrible at names for characters. Like I change character names if I don't like the name.
I don't think you're the only one that does that. Yeah.
There's no rhyme or reason. I might have liked the name Lucas in the last book, but in this book, I've changed his name, you know, to Kevin or something.
Oh, I have to usually stick with the same first letter. So
see?
So that way my mind just kind of like replaces it. Yeah.
I don't know. Allie, do you binge read?
It depends. I binge read at the beach.
Okay.
Because that's really the only time that I really can do like fun reading. Yeah. And so when I go to the beach, that's my reading time. So I think last year I read 11 books. I was at the beach. Like that's all I do.
Nice.
So yeah, but I think TV is easier because you can do other things while you have the TV on.
Yeah.
Whereas reading kind of like it's not often that you have that amount of time that you can devote just to reading as much as I wish we did.
Well, yeah, true.
I can't pull laundry and read at the same time, unless you did an audiobook, I guess you could. But.
That's where insomnia comes in handy.
That is true. Actually, I was up at 3:30 reading.
I have like a whole second life after like 10 p.m. Like, okay, day job's done, family's done. Oh, it's, this kid gets to sit awake for 6 hours.
I feel this to my soul. Well, yeah. And we had a new puppy last fall. And so there for a while, he was having to go out a couple times a night. And I'm old and my children are older and I haven't done middle of the night like potty breaks in a very long time. And it took a lot for me to like learn to fall right back to sleep. So there was a lot of 3 a.m., 4 a.m. reading.
I'm up all the time. Yeah, I do. I read a lot at night for sure. My Kindle gets a lot of action.
I never have to worry if I'm going to keep my Kindle reading streak because I know that I'm always reading after midnight.
Right? That's what I'm always like, oh my gosh, I didn't read today. And I was like, wait, I technically did read
today. You did. Your Kindle streak is safe. So we have a segment that we call our Romance Term of the Week. And we have some different topics that our listeners have been asking for us to do like an episode on. But it come to find out, it's different topics that we don't necessarily read a ton of. So right now we're in the midst of our enemies to lovers, defining it versus rivals to lovers and adversaries to lovers and the difference between them. So last week on the episode, we did enemies to lovers. This week, we're defining rivals to lovers. So the rivals to lovers trope typically involves characters who start off as competitors, adversaries, or rivals. They may have conflict, goals, personalities, or ideologies that put them at odds with each other. However, over the story, they gradually develop mutual respect, understanding, and eventually romantic feelings for each other. So here's kind of the define of difference. Enemies to lovers is about the characters who start off hating each other that have history of hatred and animosity. Versus rivals to lovers, they aren't going to have that history piece. It's just going to be this competition or something that created this tension between them. Both tropes involve characteristics transitioning from negative to positive relationship. Rivals to lovers tends to focus on the competitiveness adversaries who become romantic partners, whereas enemies to lovers center on characters who start as outright enemies before falling in love. So come to find out, we don't read a ton of enemies to lovers. I don't know why. I don't know why we don't. I struggle with it because I think that it's one of those, it has to be done in a way that it makes sense, that they don't just go from hating each other to all of a sudden, I love you. Like, I don't mind a hate bang or anything like that. It's just the feelings have to make sense.
I like it when there's a past history and then something happened that made them hate each other. And then so there's always that conflict that, you know, I used to love you and now I hate you and now I don't know what I am. And
yeah.
That's my favorite trope to write.
Yeah. I know.
There's my favorite trope to read. So much to play with for tension. You've got so much tension. You've got so much to do with dialogue and banter. And I love writing that one. But I have written rivals as well.
Yeah.
My last Smarty Pants, actually, not this year, but last year, Look Smart was a rivals.
It totally was. Yeah.
Yeah, they were competing.
Yeah. And they have great banner. Yeah.
Yeah. Competing for the same account. So.
I guess my first book this year was kind of a rivals, the Tomboy and the Captain, because they're both like, they don't really have like a deep history. It's just like their college term, but basically the hockey team took over the volleyball team's space. So she has assigned all of this blame to the hockey captain because he's like the face of the team and she just hates the patriarchy and therefore hates him.
Yeah. See, go ahead, Allie, what were you gonna say?
No, I was going to say that I think the difference, that at least for me, when I was writing rivals versus enemies, is rivals is more of an outside conflict.
You know,
their reason for their conflict is outside, external, whereas in enemies lovers, it's really more of an internal, because even in my rivals book, they had a one night stand and kind of were with each other from the beginning. And that was where the tension was the fact that they weren't allowed to be together.
Yeah.
So I think that's kind of, for me at least, that's where the difference comes in.
Yeah, there's like a personal pain point when it's enemies to lovers versus the rivals.
Well, and I think enemies has to have that background, that history that makes it, that adds to the intensity, the angst, you know, that they have to work through. And sometimes for me, I don't know that I believe the history enough. Like, I can buy a one night stand and I can buy, like, you know, Hatfields and McCoy kind of vibes, like the warring families and stuff like that. But everyone always says, oh, the hating game, like, that's great enemies to. It's not. It's rivals. They're in competition. Yeah. And they don't.
That got me thinking. Because I always thought, Jenny, you can help me with this one. So PlaySmart. You know, my favorite PlaySmart is Nash and Paige. I always thought that was, I consider that enemies to lovers, but they wouldn't have had a history because they just met and technically they're rivals because they're competing for the same job, even though one of them doesn't want the job. But they're also, there's tons of friction on a personal level as well because they're also opposites. So is that enemies or is that rivals? Now you've just blown up.
I would say it's rivals.
I need to rewrite all my blurbs and marketing materials.
We get like really nitpicky.
We do.
Maybe we can hyphenate it. Rival enemies.
Rival enemies. I mean, because in that case, like, they did have a personal hatred for each other that caused a lot of tension. Whereas in LookSmart, they didn't. They actually really liked each other.
Yeah.
Well, next week we're going to do adversaries to lovers. So, you know, we might.
What's that one then?
So... That could be more Nash and Paige.
Is that more Nash and Paige?
Yeah, because they have that kind of like personal. I mean, but they keep their banner even after they get together. So
rivals is the outside angst and competition. Adversaries is going to be no history, more personal anger towards each other.
And like, that would be PlaySmart then.
So
even though they're competing for the same thing.
Yeah.
So I feel like you can almost break this down by Tom Hanks and Meg Ryan movies.
1,000% you can. 1,000%.
You've got male would be adversaries because the big bookshop and the little bookshop. And
So we get kind of nitpicky. Like, so one of our big things is close versus forced proximity, because oftentimes people use it interchangeably, and they're actually in the world of literary fiction or in genre fiction, there is difference. So close proximity, we equate it to you have a choice. It's close proximity when they're coworkers, because you can quit your job even though you don't want to be there. If they're roommates, you can move out. You might be homeless, but you could move out. Versus forced, and basically we equate forced as to being fucked. Like, if you leave that situation, you will die.
You're gonna die.
Or harm to someone else that you love.
I wrote a short story for an anthology called Basement Wars, and where my bass player got literally locked in the basement with the love interests.
Yeah.
Which was also which I was gonna say was enemies to lovers, but now I'm not sure.
You're welcome.
I still am not sure.
Yeah, what happened was, is we started doing these trope talks and people wanted us to kind of break down the tropes and different key points they should be seeing in these tropes when they're reading them, because troping a book has become kind of big within romance. And that's how, like, those are the keywords you guys are using when you list your book for sale, are those tropes. And so
I can't figure mine out.
You can't figure it out. But oftentimes the readers will be like, oh, I really like this trope. But when you start really breaking it down and talking, they don't like that trope. They actually like one that's slightly adjacent.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So like we broke down the different aspects of single parent, like guardian, you know, raising siblings. We've done those, forced and close, coworkers.
The alphas, like, I struggled with that one, like, hardcore, putting them, like, in the boxes. Oh, the alpha hole,
the morally gray, or the anti-hero?
You already lost me. I'm so bad. I don't write to tropes. I write the book and then try to figure out where it fits, and I still cannot figure out. And Jenny, who's read some of my books, you probably like,
I read most of them.
I can't. There's some, like, even as you're saying that, I still can't. Sure.
There's no exact. There's so, no exact.
Kind of talk to me at a signing when people are like, "Well, I like this," and I'm like,
Do you do this when they ask you? Sometimes I look around at my books and I go, I'm like, "Well,
what was that one about again?"
You like lasagna, so let me see.
But you know what? We do that. If you watch any of the live YouTubes, like last weekend, we did Over the Top Protector Heroes. And I'm like looking at my bookshelves, like trying to think, like, you know, to jar the memories to like, oh, wait, that book has an over the top.
So. I think the problem is, though, that the plus and the minus of the trope is that it's designed to give you an idea of what it is, but it also has the counterpoint of like sending you in the wrong direction in terms of expectation. So that's why I have really a hard time with it, because I think it and leads to a lot of disappointment too. Because if people are like, oh, you know, which of your book, you know, you've read me, which of your books are your alphas? And I'm like, I mean,
are they all a little
alpha? I have one that was kind of mean.
It depends on what day you're reading him. Like,
I don't want to say, I don't want to say like, yeah, no, this is a billionaire book. I mean, there's a billionaire in it, but it's a woman, and you know, it's not what you would expect from a billionaire book. So to call it a billionaire book is probably technically correct, but it's also not giving you the information that you're expecting. And so that can be good or bad depending on the reader. So
which of your books is a female billionaire? Because I just had someone ask me for Rex for that.
Ashton Morgan.
Okay.
Ashton Morgan, he's the poor kid. She's the billionaire's daughter.
I love that.
It's so good. You have to read it. It's so good.
I love that. Like, I love when it's the female billionaire.
That tends to be my thing, is to just turn everything on its head. I mean, pretty much as, and again, you learn so much when you're at a signing explaining your books to somebody and you're like, oh, I definitely have a thing. My thing is to make the girl the guy and flip a trope on its head.
There's nothing wrong with that, though. I kind of like that because it takes, I've been reading romance for a very long time. I've been reading romance since 1991. And I know that some people, like, I've seen the conversation recently, like, books are feeling a little rinse and repeat lately. You know, like, we're getting kind of... And I think especially if you're reading some of the small town stuff, it can start to feel a little similar. But then you get things where it's the female billionaire or the female owner of the ranch or whatever. And it's not the same. Each book is unique in its own way that it plays out. You just have to find them. And I think...
Yeah, I think that's why, like even with me, I mean, even though my books are all over the map in terms of tropes and genres and stories and all that stuff, like, I think there's still that underlying piece that, you know, I definitely, again, have learned through talking about them at signings. That is definitely an alley thing. Typically, it's the, you know, troubled guy being saved by the strong woman. So if you don't like that, you probably aren't going to like a lot of my books, but... and a lot of that is involved with kind of flipping things, like you said, the billionaire, she's the wealthy one, or like in Street Smart, she's the boss, he's the intern, and even in my age gap, she's the older one, he's the younger one. So I don't know. Yeah, I have a thing.
That's okay. Ginger, do you have a thing?
Gosh, I, you know, sometimes I like to, I really actually push myself to go the unexpected way. So I write a lot of sports romance. So I know everyone loves when like the team wins and, you know, everyone gets their way, but I like to see it go horribly wrong. like when it, you know, when things don't work out, and then you get kind of this interesting dynamic of like, okay, well, how does this person who their, you know, their whole being is wrapped up in the fact that they are this athlete and they are this star, and I just took them out for a season because I didn't just give them a little injury. I just snapped their femur. okay, now what kind of person is left? And so I like to see, I know it kind of makes the writing process for me, you know, and sometimes I won't know what's happening, and then I'll write it and I'll be like, oh, oops, I just changed those 7 chapters.
And that's why I love you.
Thanks.
Ginger, you write new adult.
Uh-huh.
Most of your books, I think, are all college, right?
I would say I write upper YA to new adult. So mostly, like, my sweet spot is like 17 to 27. So that 10-year gap is kind of where, because I just think people are really interesting in that age.
So I have to ask a question as the mom of somebody that I have those ages, right? Like, I have 19 and almost,
yep.
Right. And I struggle to read those at different times, just because I'm like, do I want to think about that with, you know, like,
I'm really good at separating it. And I don't know how. I wish I could tell you like what my little trick is, but I do separate it. I think also, I mean, everyone thinks their kid is unique, but my kid's, he's not the partier.
Mine aren't either.
He's not the characters I'm writing, other than like being an athlete. He plays baseball, but literally he wakes up and goes to the gym. He goes to class. He goes to hitting practice. He goes to fielding practice. And then he goes back to the gym. Like, that's his life. There's no room in there, which, thank God, for all the chaos that I like to write. So.
Yeah. Yeah. My children are very much not typical. Like, my girl child went with us to the signing in Columbus last weekend.
Oh, nice.
Like, she went the whole weekend and hung out with a bunch of us, like, you know, moms.
I brought my son to Love in Vegas and he was my assistant and he started collecting bracelets and he was making all his friends. He was like, I didn't know this was a thing. And I was like, I think you're a thing now. I think now you've become a thing.
He's like his own thing.
I'm hoping to bring mine to Bell's in Orlando.
Oh my gosh, that would be, I'm not going to that one.
Well, the last one at Sweetgrass, everyone had their, mine's my older one's 17, everyone had their children there, and I was like,
it is fun. I've had Carter come to like 3 or 4 like that are easy to go to. California, because I'm in Arizona, is really easy. Mm-hmm. So anything there, and it's just fun. He's super supportive of, you know, go business mom.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Oh, my son tells all his friends that, you know, his mom does book things. She's weird. But my girl child, her friends will be like, hey, can you ask your mom what book we should read if we like this? And I'm like, gosh. And your friends are how old? She's like, they're college mom. Just like, I'm like, oh, okay. Then they can read these.
So funny. My kid did start to, like, especially in high school, he would take books to girls and he'd be like, could you sign this one? And I'm like, didn't I sign one for a girl with a different last week? He's like,
It's so awkward too when they break up and you're thinking, that girl has my book now on her.
I know. I hope she didn't burn it. I hope she at least
did. Yeah, right? I was like, what does she do with it now? I don't know.
Hopefully she turned it into half price books for like at least a credit. Like, donated it to a free little library.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Put it in the free library.
Okay, so welcome to this episode of Buzzing About Romance. Today, we're delighted to be joined by two incredible guests, the talented author Allie Stiles and the enchanting author Ginger Scott. Get ready to dive into the world of contemporary romance as we explore the magic, the challenges, and the endless possibilities of crafting love stories that capture our hearts. I didn't get very flowery this week. No, Jenny, I behave when we have company. Some of my intros have gotten really elaborate and everybody's dying over them.
Oh. Well, you called me enchanting, so that's exciting. That will be a first, probably a last.
You are enchanting.
I think you're enchanting. We'll keep you.
Can't wait to tell my husband that. He's going to love it.
So, okay, both romance writers, obviously a little bit different in what you write, but why romance? What is it that when you decided, okay, I got stories to write, I've got stories to tell, why go the romance route? What led you to romance? Allie?
Well, it wasn't on purpose.
I didn't mean to be here, like, really.
It's true though. So I wrote Night Shifts Black, which, if you read that one, it's actually technically not a romance because, I guess it's 8 years old, so spoiler alerts don't really count. They don't end up together. The two main characters don't end up together.
Follow the rules.
It doesn't follow any of the rules because it wasn't written as a romance. I actually didn't read romance. I just wrote it and released, and then I kind of got pulled into indie romance through Beth Flynn. So she was a friend of mine, and so she kind of promoted or posted about it when it came out, and that's how I ended up in romance. So that was my introduction to romance, and then I started reading it, and then I really loved it, and then learned that there are rules, and I broke them all. And so then I tried hard to follow the rules from that point on, but now I can't imagine not writing romance. I mean, even if I tried to write a story, you know, I think it would still be very romance heavy because it's just such an important part of being human, and it just infiltrates every other aspect of our life. So it's just, I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm glad it worked out that way, but wasn't on purpose.
Was not on purpose. Ginger, what about you? What led you to the romance?
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot like Allie. My reading journey started as like the awkward 11-year-old that finally picked up a Judy Blume chapter book, and it was forever. And I remember it was the first time I read a book with sex in it, and I was like, oh my God, I'm gonna have to hide this from my parents. And yeah, come to find out, like, you know, older version of me, my mom's like, yeah, honey, I read Anne Rice, you're fine. But I just loved that it was a book that had so much, like it dove into the internal, the feelings, and not just those surface, you know, butterflies and falling in love with someone, but also the feeling inadequate, sort of the anxiety that comes along with being that age, which is probably why I gravitate to writing that age, because it's so much of figuring out who you are. Like, even if you think you're confident at that age, you know, now that I'm very far from that age, I know that it's a whole different level of confident that happens as you age. And it just, I don't know. I love the feelings. And I would contend that everything somewhere has a romance in it. Because I mean, you look at like the story Divergent. The reason I love Divergent is because of that scene where his hand, you know, where she finds out that that's it for me. I was like, oh, I'm all in now. Now I'm all in. Okay. Yeah. Dystopia. But Theo James just did this.
Yeah. No, yeah. I think that a lot of things have romantic elements. Like, mm-hmm. we'll be watching an action movie and there's a romantic subplot to it, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Jeremy watches a bunch of anime and I'm always like, Don't go.
Yeah. You're like, I could tell you this whole trope right now.
Exactly.
Well, it's funny, and my poor husband, because he does all our production stuff for the podcast, and he listens to me. He now tropes his own shows. He'll be like, this is kind of a, you know, XYZ, and I'll be like, yeah, it is, dude, you're right. Like, this is our life now.
You know which one's fun to trope is Game of Thrones. Try troping Game of Thrones. It's all the tropes.
It is all the tropes.
Once, all hyphenated.
And he broke all the rules.
Yeah, like taboo, enemies to lovers.
Yeah. Incest.
I remember that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm still, we just talked about this the other night. Like, there's still no book. We might all die before we ever get the last book in the series.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the big fear. Is George R. R. Martin going to die before he writes the book?
I don't know.
He's been writing it a long time and it doesn't exist still. So
I think he's romance made his money, right? And so
what were you going to say, Allie?
No, I said, I was just thinking about you. Like, I think the romance too, it's something that we can all relate to on some level, whether it's that we want to fall in love, or that we've had a bad experience falling in love, or that we haven't been able to fall in love. And it's just so rich with nuance and the ability to tell, you can tell infinite number of stories about being in love or not being in love.
Yeah.
We can all relate to it somehow.
Yeah.
I also think romance has a piece that allows all of us, no matter who you are, what you are, how you live, to be seen.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I will never forget when I picked up the first romance with a plus size heroine in it, you know, and at the time it was Amaya Banks. And I was just like, what? This is real? Like, this happens? And at that point, I'd already been married, you know, already had children. But I just kept thinking, oh, I'm seen here. Like, this. And I think that there is a power to that. Like, no matter who you are, what you are, you deserve love.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. For me, it's mental illness and just bringing mental illness into the conversation and just how that affects how, you know, love doesn't cure it, but love is part of, still part of your experience and a very important part of your experience.
I think that's why Allie and I gel so much. I think we both kind of are called to, like, we're attracted to the same sort of struggles, you know, with mental illness or addiction. We've both kind of dove into those sort of areas, and it adds another layer onto, you know, the whole falling in love and the love story. And it's almost like both mental illness and I think addiction can be like, they're almost their own characters in the books.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And it can be done in such a way that shows power and strength. And, you know, the addiction itself can have its own kind of character arc and growth, you know, as it's a challenge to overcome. And it's really interesting because, especially because I've been reading romance so long, I love that we are seeing so much more brought in with neurodivergence, addiction, mm-hmm. Mental illness. I love that these characters are starting to feel real. Like, these are representative of the people in my life or the people I love.
Mm-hmm. Well, it goes back to what you're saying about being seen, and especially in something like mental illness, where the stigma has kept it hidden for so long, but so many people relate to it. And since I've started really, you know, writing about it so much, I can't even tell you how many people have reached out to say, you know, that they were just so happy to see that, you know, themselves represented and understand. And even if they don't, they were able to give the book. It's a way to communicate with someone, to give them the book. Here, read this, and you can understand how I feel. I can't express it, but this expresses it for me. Yeah. So I think that's where that power comes in as well. But if you tie it into a romance, and then you're also able to relate to it. So yeah, it's just serving this double function of being relatable on multiple levels.
And I would think you probably get messages like this, Allie, because Allie does this really well. She shows their struggle, but then they get the happy ending, you know? And so I think for a lot of people, it gives them kind of a hopeful feeling, like, okay, yeah, if I just keep fighting, like, it's going to get better. You know, you give them kind of the light with the dark. And I think I would imagine you probably get a lot of emails about that. I know I've sent you.
I sent you that too.
I just finished and this and Camden's my favorite.
I think that's really important though. I think you have to put that element of hope and that inspirational element to it. And my books go real dark and they can go real dark emotionally. But that's only half the picture, because there's no point if there's no hope. And I think part of that conversation is the fact that there's hope, because there are so many things that we can do to fight back and fight against, you know, those struggles. And part of that is relationships, not just romantic relationships, but friendships, you know, therapists, you know, people who have been there before, you know, support systems. And so a lot of my books are also found family. It's finding that support network that you need, whatever that looks like. It doesn't have to be,
yeah.
It can be anything. And each book, they're all different, but I think that is a big part of it. And I think it's really important, like you said. And so for me, a happy ending isn't usually just about the relationship. That's part of it. But it's also more about finding their way and getting on the right path. And even if you don't necessarily see you know, the big beautiful wedding and the, you know, white picket fence ending, you're seeing that they're finding their way, and they have that hope. And I think that is a really important element, especially if you write as dark as I do. You need to have that element of hope.
You give them their voice. And I think, like, they kind of, going to the whole stigma thing that you mentioned, you show them that, you know, okay, you can tell other people about what's going on with you, and look at the good that comes of it. And that's a powerful message. So
yeah,
good on you.
Yeah, because the characters aren't fixed per se at the end. Yeah. Like, they're still struggling, but like,
but they learn how to open up about it. Yeah.
Right. And that's my personal have the journey. Support. Yeah. They have the support they need.
And that's my personal journey. I mean, that's I'm just writing, you know, what I experience and what I go through, and the highs and lows of dealing with mental illness. And you know, and so, yeah, I'm so blessed that I can use that experience and, you know, to share it with other people and put it in a package, it in a format that's easy, you know, to share with other people and have them absorb, in a way that's almost non-threatening, because it's a lot easier to be like, here, read this book about this rock star than to say, let's talk about mental bipolar disorder. Like, you know, it's just, you know, that's one of the beauties of romance and of books and, you know, art in general, is a way to package these things so that people can consume them in a safer way.
Oh, absolutely. And I'm not one of the people, and I don't think many of our listeners really are, that demand the picket fence or the big wedding or the engagement. We just need enough information to know that it is forever. You know, we're absolutely kind of HEAs more than HFNs, but
you need the closure.
I just need to know at the end of the day, there is peace and contentment. It doesn't have to be perfect, you know, but that everything is just okay.
Yeah.
You know,
those things have their place too. Yeah. I mean, there's so many books where, like, yeah, you need the big wedding and the white picket fence. Sure. Like, there's definitely times where that's true, but then there's also times where that's not the authentic ending. You need to walk that balance of what feels authentic and what gives you that sense of closure and hope that you're looking for. Yeah. So that's the you know, challenge of trying to come up with the ending, and that works.
Well, so, and Allie wrote a wedding book that did not go.
It didn't go the right way.
They got married, but
it was a long route.
Yeah. So, well, go ahead. No, go ahead, Allie. What are you saying?
Oh, no, I was just going to say that wedding book wasn't even supposed to happen. That was never planned. I wrote Limelight and I ended it, and everyone's like, you cannot end the series with this book. Limelight was so rough that it needed not only an HEA, it needed an entire HEA book.
Oh,
got its own book.
That's so funny. So, Ginger, writing like young adult, new adult, that 17 to 27 age span, is it hard to write HEAs? Do you tend to write more happily for nows?
So I would say, like, you know, with my college, or if they're, you know, just post-college, I can usually get more into the HEA, because I myself am one of those. I met my husband at, gosh, did we meet at 19? Yeah. I had to like go back now. We met in college and just, you know, that was it. He was my person and I knew it. And we got married at 22 as soon as we graduated, because for some reason we thought that helped on our taxes. I don't know.
I got married in college, so I get it.
Yeah, I was 22. He was 23. It was a matter. My dad said if we just lived together, he wouldn't pay for my schooling the next semester. So
there
we'll
you go.
Get married, sure.
Yeah. And it's, I mean, now I'm, you know, we just had our 25th wedding anniversary. Yeah. So it's, I believe in the HEA at that age. So that's, you know, I feel authentically that I can sell it pretty well. But yeah, with the high school age, it's usually more of a, you get that glimpse of maybe them, you know, in college or just post-college, or maybe they've been apart for a while. And, you know, maybe the epilogue shows them, you know, meeting again and, you know, rekindling the old feelings. And so you get that everything is okay sort of feeling, which sometimes I struggle with personally, because I actually like a messy sort of ending. So I'm constantly telling my my publicist, I'm like, okay, so I think I'm done. And she's like, yeah, where's the epilogue? And I'm like, oh, no epilogue. And she's like, Ginger, you have to give me an epilogue. And I'm like, no, 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 no.
I don't read epilogues. I don't read them at all.
I'm speaking to Becky's heart.
I don't like.
I'm just kidding. I don't like. But most people love them, and so I, you know. But I think that's the nice thing about epilogues is it's labeled epilogue. So right. You know, if you want the hard fade to black like The Sopranos, like I do, then you can just go. Or if you want sort of the frosting on top. The epilogue
so
is there.
My thought process on epilogues. So I started reading romance as bodice rippers. My mom read all the Jude Devereaux's, the Joanna Lindsay's, the Judith McNaught's, and I was reading her books. And those books often start with the scandal, the marriage, and then they have to figure out how to be together. Mm-hmm. So they didn't have epilogues in those books. So I never really got into reading epilogues early on in my romance journey. And then I started to feel like if you have to give me an epilogue to sell the rest of the story, to, you know, that it's like the book ends and then we have the epilogue and that's where you like really confirm the HEA, that should have been a chapter. The epilogue should just be the frosting. It should be, you know, a glimpse in the future or even a couple days later, just that life is good. We are happy. Things are okay. But if you have to have the epilogue to like sell that this story, this relationship is done and solid, then it needs to be a chapter. So I don't read epilogues and I get yelled at so much.
Oh, do you? I bet. Yeah. I mean, I will admit now, I enjoy reading them in most romances. Sometimes I choose not to, just because I love, I don't know. I love the craft, the way someone crafted that perfect ending, how they kind of just left it there at like a moment in time. And I find I usually try to do that, especially with the young adult, to just sort of leave them. Cause as much as young adult romance is about two people falling in love, it's also about them falling in love with themselves and it's their character arcs. So it's almost more important at the end for them to, okay, we've finished this journey. We're ready for the next one. Yeah. Separately, you know, and then, you know, in a good space together, in a healthy space together, maybe, you know, maybe in the future we come back. And so usually my epilogues for a YA are sort of that like looking glass of, you know, do they, you know, do I get to see them? Do they reconnect later or are they still, you know, at the same college, that kind of thing?
Yeah. Allie, do you love an epilogue? I saw your look of like, what?
I mean, like everything, it depends on the story. Some might have epilogues, some of them don't. I mean, I'm definitely like, just feel it out. Sometimes I feel like, you know, there's nothing new to say here. The thing I don't like about epilogues, especially in series, is that you're locking yourself into timelines, and I don't like that. So I tend to, if I do write an epilogue, it tends to not be too far in the future.
Yeah.
To leave myself flexibility in other stories, especially if they're interconnected. Or I'll use an epilogue to almost close out another loose end that's almost like a joke. I'll put like little joke, but... Yeah, my epilogues in general are definitely ancillary to the story. Like, I feel like I need to finish it in the story or I will make it another chapter, like you said.
Okay.
But it is hard. It is hard because sometimes you write that line and you're like, that line, that's the end of the book right there, that line. Yeah. And that perfect line, you know, it's like you want to end the book there, but you still have those couple little things you got to finish. Like those little.
Yeah.
But that's where the temptation comes in to just like, let it be there and then I'll fix the rest of it in the epilogue. But
you could just start underlining that line. Like just
I've written that line in the middle of the book and I'm like, oh, this is the end of the book. So I'm gonna have to like move it to the end of the book and fill in the, you know, 12 chapters before.
It just keeps moving down the word document.
That's exactly what happens. It's happened multiple times. Or like that one scene, I was like, oh, this is the end of the book. But I need to write 12 more chapters first.
Right. Okay, so this brings me up to my next controversial question. Do you think romance needs third act breakups?
No. Depends on the story.
Yeah, it depends. Yeah.
I've honestly never, ever, ever thought like purposely had one or didn't have one. It just
how the story plays out for you.
Yeah.
So currently it seems to be that lots of people are wanting books to have like a vibe, you know, and avoid the miscommunication and just be easy versus like a deep context or a deep emotional piece. Like they just want it to be easy. And then it gets messy when you start adding, when you start giving books that are a little more than a vibe, right? Like when you start adding things like addiction and mental health, they're not as easy to read. So that plays into, I think, this current trend that we don't need third act breakups anymore. Like they're not realistic. Nobody needs them. And I think it's because I'm so old school in my romance reading. I need the third act breakup or I need that outside piece that creates a dark moment.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, there has to be conflict for sure in the third act.
Yeah. Otherwise it's just a commercial. Yeah. You need to get a conflict. Yeah.
No, there's nothing easy about my books. Yeah. So if you like easy reads, stay away.
I don't want easy. I want to feel those emotions.
And certainly those books have their place and you know, and there's authors that do it really, really well. It's just not what I do. So but yeah, as far as like, you know, miscommunication, all those things, I mean, again, it just totally depends on the story. And as long as it's done well and done in a believable way, and you know, I think that anything goes. I don't really follow, I would never do something or not do something with that, you know, if the story calls for it.
Yeah, I don't think that I'm not thinking of those things when I'm constructing an idea in my head. Usually, like what will happen with me is I'll write something really hard and heavy, and then I might need personally as a writer to write some ice cream. Like I might be like, okay, I'm gonna write something just kind of fun. This one's gonna be fun, and when I go into something fun, yeah, it'll still have a lot of those me elements, but maybe not quite as, you know, like. The standalone I wrote before the trilogy I'm working on now, which is all just kind of a college sports trilogy. There was a death. It was really heavy, and it was just, and it loomed over the entire story. And it's my favorite thing I've ever written, and I think is beautiful. But I needed some good, you know, reruns, some I Love Lucy's. Just to kind of like pull myself back up. So that way, you know, this fall I can dive back in.
Yeah. Jenny calls those mac and cheese reads.
Oh yeah. Mac and cheese. That's good.
It's just comforting. It's easy.
Comforting,
know what to expect. Like, can add some toppings if you want.
You can. I think mine probably have a little sour cream and bacon, you know.
There you go.
but then I'm also going to hit you with the sledgehammer that punches you in the gut.
Allie, I think that's probably why I have enjoyed the books that you write, because I love the angst and the tension. And
she sledgehammers you all over the place.
I've tried because everyone's telling me like, your books are too heavy, like you need to, you know, blah blah blah. And I was like, so all right, this one I'm not gonna, you know, I can't.
No,
it just is what it is. I don't I'm not, again, I'm not trying to write anything. I'm not going into a book saying, oh, this is going to be this. It just, I go into a book with an idea and it is what it is. And then I figure it out.
Yeah.
And then I figure out how to market it.
With like PlaySmart and StageSmart, like that's, you know, that's different. I think that's more, that's your version of mac and cheese. You know, that's just,
even those are tough because people think for like, you know, easy rom-coms and I mark it as a rom-com, then I get some pretty interesting feedback.
Yeah, they're like, that was a dark comedy.
Yeah. Like, what's with this like mental illness and addiction? And like,
doesn't really scream rom-com. You know,
it is like, I think when I write, I was just talking to my husband about it today. I was like, when I write rom-com, that's the difference, is it's, you know, I pull myself back. So in one of my other books, I would have taken that element and I would have just crush the crap out of that thing. Whereas the rom-coms, I try to like, you know, scale back, and then you offset it. So like when you're writing an angsty emotional book, you want to sit in that place, and you want to build and build and build, you know, that tension in your heart. But then when you're writing rom-com, if you have a moment like that, you quickly follow it up with a lighter moment to break that tension much faster. That's kind of the difference between, I would say, my rom-coms and my regular books, is you don't stay in that tense place.
A lot of
humor to break all that up. And even my heavy books, though, I put a lot of humor in for that same reason, just, you know, not quite as much. But even like Limelight had Derek, and there's always those characters that, you know, have their purpose of trying to break up that tension, so it's not too heavy.
What about you, Ginger? How is it to portray those like realistic romance and everything, but also the realistic piece of these are 18, 19, 20, 25 year olds? And I mean, I got married young, and I was a mess. We didn't have kids until we were 30. And it was like, there was a reason.
Yes. Right. Well, you know, I don't know. I love people watching. And so a lot of things come from that, you know, just observing. Maybe there's an anthropologist in me somewhere that just like really loves to, you know, observe the teenager in his element kind of thing. Me and my son are very, very close. You know, we talk about everything. Sometimes I think he's like, okay, you could be a little less honest, mom. We don't need to, but that's just, you know, he fully knows what he's getting into in life. And, you know, he knows that he's got a team behind him that can help pull him out of situations. But I think that's also helped me really kind of stay tuned into that age range and that age group. And, I don't know, maybe there's a part of me that will always be there. Maybe I'm secretly meant to be a high school English teacher. I don't know, but I just, the problems and the struggles are the same, but the forces are just different. So, I mean, you know, there's the mean girls, there's the bullying, there's the cliques, there's the stigmas, there's, you know, the mental health, just, you can talk about it more now than you did when I was 16, 17. It's all the same feelings, because I'll have 60-year-old women that will read some of my high school books, and they'll say, you took me right back. I was there. I was that girl. And I think we're all always that girl. Sure. It's just, you know, sometimes now that girl comes with social media and like all of these other extra added forces. And young readers and then old readers, or like I like to say, teenagers my age, they want to read the authentic youth. And the authentic youth, I don't think is necessarily, you know, their big problem isn't necessarily 10 ways to find the best dress for prom. It's 10 ways to not cry myself to sleep at night because I feel so excluded. That's what, you know, they want those conversations. And I think when you see it, and like Ali said earlier, when you identify with it, that's kind of where you can really connect with readers.
It's really interesting too, especially being the mom of young adults. Now, what matters to them, what's important to them, is so different. Like, I remember being 20, 21, and it was going to class and then going to the bar and, you know, just carefree, easy, you know, $20 in my pocket. And, you know, my son is sharing his thoughts on economy and politics. Yeah. And it's just like, dude, you're 20. Just take a breath. Like, it's going to be okay.
Yeah. But maybe, you know, maybe they're not different. It's just the outlets are different, you know, to do those things. And they're definitely more exposed. Whereas, you know, I had the Cronkite CBS Evening News telling you,
right.
And, you know, when you're 16, you're like, okay, I'm done. that's enough of that. But, you know, whereas he's getting it in a, you know, 10 second TikTok video. So it's just a matter of kind of embracing that space and including it in the story.
Yeah. Okay. So next, tell us what is next for each of you? Because hard to believe, but we've already been talking for an hour.
Oh my gosh.
It just goes so fast. Okay, so tell us what is next for each of you. Allie, what's next for you? You just had a release, and then what's next?
What's next is probably going to be is Undertow, which is a standalone epic suspense sort of mafia. It's sort of not, I don't even know where to go with that. One of my good friends, Julian, he's writing original poetry to go with it. It's definitely going to be, I was designing it to be an experience. So there's a song that goes with it. The song's already out. The song's been out for a while. There's a video, music video that goes with it. But yeah, it's going to be probably unlike anything you've read from me before. Maybe from anyone. I told you, I am the worst nightmare for a publicist. So I have no idea how you would market this book.
Okay.
I think you just flip that clip of what you said and then you go,
yay, some jazz hands to make it special.
I volunteer as tribute. I cannot wait to read it. So
is that going to be later this year?
I'm hoping for this summer.
Okay.
So that's coming. And then also at the same time is going to be, I'm re-releasing my very first book. It's called Tri-Cent Commissioning. It is an ancient Roman spy thriller that I rewrote, redid everything completely different and better. That's coming out and hopefully this year as well. So I've always loved that series. I always wished I had done it differently. I pulled it down several years ago and I'm going to do it differently. And do it better.
Awesome.
And bring it back to life.
Awesome. Ginger, what's next for you?
I have the third and final book in my Final Score series. So they're all just talking about tropes. They're all, every book is just super, you know, very like trope heavy. So I had the Tomboy and the Captain, and that was the rivals, as I now know. Enemies to lovers / rivals. And then I had the Wallflower and the Running Back. So that was the opposites of attract with a slight hint of fake dating in there. And now I'm finishing up the Best Friend and the Shortstop. So it's the, you know, friends to lovers with a slight twist on fake dating, and it's baseball, which happens to be my favorite everything.
Okay.
So this book will be,
okay.
You know, this will be the ultimate book boyfriend. Yeah.
So, and I asked this because one of our co-hosts, Lindsay, is like, baseball is her thing. Like, legit, her husband forgot to order the MLB package for this season and she missed opening day. And we were all trying to talk her down from like seriously just divorcing him. She's like, I'm pissed. Gosh. He left town. Done. He didn't order it. I didn't get to see. Like, she about lost her shit. And I'm like, okay, friend, it's going to be okay. Reruns, you can, you know, anyway. Do you have a lot of baseball?
I have an awful lot of baseball. Okay. Yeah.
Lindsay, yeah. Ginger Scott, go read them.
I would say like my best seller is probably This Is Falling, and it's college baseball.
Okay.
And he's a catcher because catchers are really like the heart of the team and far sexier than pitchers. And I could really get into it, but I won't.
But we will tell Lindsay because like,
well, yeah. And there's actual baseball.
So that's her piece is like baseball. Somebody will say, oh, this is a baseball book. And then they have no clue about baseball.
Oh yeah. No, no,
and
no.
She gets rowdy. No.
She does baseball like I do rockers.
Okay.
So it is true. Okay. It is true. Yeah.
So
I spend, spring training because I live right by the ballpark for the Mariners and the Padres.
Yeah.
I write out there all month. So I get when the gates open at 11:15, sometimes I can get in at 11 because I know people and I have a seat where I know it's going to be shady and I can put my computer and they just, the volunteers all think that I'm media. So I just let them and I sit out there for 5 hours and I write because it's the best background noise and it's outside. It's beautiful. And yeah.
So if somebody named Lindsay starts stalking you and messaging you about baseball, it wasn't
as
us.
As long as she's not a Dodger fan. If she's a Dodger fan, we might be in trouble.
I think she's an Orioles fan. She's originally from the East Coast and now lives in New Mexico.
Okay, that's safe.
Yeah, and she's actually over there. She's traveling in a couple weeks to Arizona, so we're not telling her until she comes home, because I really don't need you to get us.
Well, Ginger and our relationship survived last year's playoffs, so.
It did.
That's how you know we're legit friends.
Yeah, when the Diamondbacks played the Phillies, it was, you know, we were both, yeah. We supported each other. I'm so sorry we had to take you out.
Oh, yeah, so sorry.
That's so funny.
It really sounded we got our butts kicked by Texas, so it's fine.
Exactly. Whoever would have gotten their butts kicked anyway.
Okay, so now it's that time. That time, Jenny, for Book of the Week. It's Book of the Week time. There's no Leah here, so you didn't get jazz hands. I'm really sorry. Ginger will give us jazz hands. Allie, what is your Book of the Week? Yeah. Just say, you can say your new, because you have a new release that came out last week.
Oh, okay.
Your Book of the Week.
Stay Smart is my book. Yes, it is a little bit of rock, a lot of Chad.
A lot of some Merkins.
Jenny, do you want to sell Allie's Book of the Week?
She'll do a better job than I will. We've learned that.
Yeah. Well, there's like a little bit of like corporate espionage in there. A rock star that's like finding how to be true to herself, and a producer that's growing his confidence.
Okay. And that's part of the Smarty Pants Knitting in the City universe, right?
Educated. Technically, even though we're so far from that at this point, but this is book four, so.
We're like 10 steps away now at this point.
It's like very loosely like tied to like Martin.
Abram has a cameo. He's on the phone. Yes, Abram's on FaceTime call.
Yes.
Okay. There you go. That's the time.
Ginger, what's your Book of the Week?
Gosh, you know what? I'm actually going to shout out one that's not mine. I just finished my first Chantel Tessier, right? Is that how you say it? Tessier?
Mm-hmm.
I just finished The Ritual, and I had not read her before, but everyone was talking about her, and I went to a PolyCon, and like I heard her name on the loudspeaker every 6 seconds. And so I was like, okay, I've got to know what this is all about. And now I know. That was something.
It is an experience of angst.
Yeah, it was a good experience of angst. It was, I read everything, yeah. You know, I read nonfiction, I read, you know, comedy, I read everything. That was how I wanted to experience a good dose of dark. And that was, I did it.
I need my heart to be ripped out, like rip it out.
Yeah. Ripped it out and then put it through torture mechanisms I didn't know existed. So.
Yeah, her books. Yep. If you pick it up, guys, check content trigger warnings if you have any.
Because she puts that content warning right up front. So yeah, I just went through it and I was like, yeah, okay, that's me. Let's go.
Yeah. I don't have any triggers, so it's really nice. But I try to be a better community member and make sure that I caveat. Check your content and trigger warning. I don't have any, but you know, obviously not everybody is that person.
And she does. She lists them all at the very beginning. So just so you know what you're getting into. So
the chaos you're about to read. Jenny, what's your Book of the Week?
Rough and Tumble by
who? Who is Rough and Tumble by, Jenny? So it's
Renna Morgan.
Renna Morgan. Yeah.
Because Becky's gonna fire me if I don't read it. So I'm like halfway through.
Uh-huh.
I'm not sure like what's going on completely yet, but
that's book one of seven. Yeah. If you haven't read Renna Morgan, she writes romantic suspense. She writes morally gray heroes who are over the top protectors, but she also likes to do a twist on the female role. None of her characters are damsels in distress. She's like, her book two has a female mechanic that also does like car restoration. Like that's muscle car restoration is her, what the job is. And she ends up with a doctor who he's a little girly. Always got pristine. And she's like, you need to get dirty. Anyway, she's one of those authors that I adore her books. She doesn't write a ton. She was with Carina Press for a long time. She hasn't published in the last 18 months, but it's one of those authors that her books are just, they hold up and they're really good. And I talk about her all the time, and certain co-hosts have not yet read her books.
She's on it.
Right. And so I threatened to fire them if they didn't read them. I didn't really, but maybe.
That's
so fun. My book of the week is Cold Hard Truth by Eva Simmons. I had an early arc of this. It is motorcycle club adjacent. I struggle sometimes with motorcycle club, especially when they never ride motorcycles. Like, how do you write motorcycle club and nobody ever rode a motorcycle? But we've read it. It happens. Oh. But this one, they do ride motorcycles, Jenny. I know you were worried about that. They do ride motorcycles.
I was worried. I was concerned.
It's book four, and they own a tattoo parlor that is adjacent to the motorcycle club. It's emotional and it's angsty. Like, and I mean,
that's a magic word.
I have been through it in this book. I'm like crying and gasping. And I thought I woke Mike up the other night. I was reading because something happened. So I'm like, and I was like, oh, wait, that was really loud. Anyway, so that's my book of the week. Patreon update. Our May swag packs should be en route. They should be landing on people's doorstep in the coming days. May swag packs are sponsored by author Gracie Cooper and Maude Winters, and we have a couple of items thrown in from Laura Lynn Page. Inside each pack, discover an array of loved-themed goodies designed to ignite your passion for love stories. And guess what? We ship these worldwide, so everyone can join in on the fun. But wait, there's more! By becoming a part of our Patreon family, you unlock exclusive perks like access to special episodes and our fabulous Buzzing Book Club, the ultimate romance adventure. Also, programming note, Quick Shots of Romance are now exclusive to our Patreon, so you can check that out over there. To stay up to date on all of our events by subscribing to our newsletter and checking out our event calendar at bookcaseandcoffee.com/events. From happy hours to IG lives and book clubs, there's always something happening in our community. Allie and Ginger, thank you so much for hanging out with us tonight.
Thanks for having me.
Of course. We'll be back on Wednesday night with our next book club styled episode. We're reading King's Crown by Marie Johnston, and we'll be talking about that. It was our book club selection for May. Until next time, everybody, happy reading.
Find us on Instagram at Buzzing About Romance or on Twitter at Buzzing Romance. If you like the podcast, please leave a review. If you'd like to support us directly, join the Bookcase and Coffee Patreon and receive exclusive content only available to Patreon members. Check out bookcaseandcoffee.com for our on-the-shelf show notes.